Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is a rebroadcast of a Brian Lehrer Show segment, so don't even think about calling in. But you can comment on our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Now, here at the Brian Lehrer Show, we feel very strongly that part of our job is to bring you, our listeners, the most up-to-date health information. So in that spirit of public service, here's a little audio demonstration on how to dress properly for the weather.
This is Joan, getting ready for school. Joan learned at school that it's important to choose the right clothes on a cold day. The temperature is 40, too cold for just a coat. She will need her snowsuit if she wishes to keep well for the Dutch festival.
Got that? A coat alone won't cut it. And if you're listening to this at work, stop slumping.
Here is an office worker who has never heard of the first rule for health. He doesn't know that bad posture can actually make him ill.
Yeah, you probably figured it out. Those are actually two health films from the 1940s and 1950s. And if we triggered your skepticism, you are not alone, because joining me now is Dr. Aaron Carroll. He is a professor at Indiana University School of Medicine, and he is the co-author of a new book called Don't Swallow Your Gum, Myths, Half-Truths, and Outright Lies About Your Body and Health. Dr. Carroll, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
Why'd you write this book?
First of all, I got to tell you, those clips are fantastic. We wrote this book because we actually started a few years ago where we heard on the radio some different these health myths, and we realized they just weren't true, even though they were pretty much pushed by mainstream media and from physicians. We wound up getting a collection together and presenting it at a meeting where it went over very well. And then we wrote a paper for the British Medical Journal that was published about a year and a half ago that, again, got a reasonable amount of press. And we thought, you know what? These things seem to be very popular. They're very well known, and a lot of people believe them, and so we went and actually wrote a whole book about them.
So the one in your title, Don't Swallow Your Gum?
It's totally not true that it will get stuck in your stomach, really, that it'll be there for 7 years. The body is incredibly good at moving things from one end to the other, even things that aren't digestible. I wouldn't advocate, you know, eating a whole pack of gum, because certainly if you could eat a huge wad of it, it could get stuck, but a normal-sized piece of gum which is swallowed is going to pass right through your system.
So, listeners, do you have your favorite myths, half-truths, and outright lies about your body and health, or do you have questions about ones that may even be in Dr. Carroll's book? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Of course, the two in those old health films from the 40s and 50s are actually right, aren't they? I mean, too cold for just a coat. She'll need her snowsuit. Dressing in layers is a good thing, at least to keep you warm. And the bad posture can make him ill. That's not a myth, is it? At least it can, you know, can curve your spine or do whatever it does.
Actually, it really can't. I mean, it's not going to curve your spine permanently. It certainly would, it could actually leave your muscles being sore, and it could actually lead to further bad posture.
It could give you lower, I don't mean it's going to give you, you know, structural scoliosis, but it can give you chronic lower back pain, can't it?
Yes, absolutely. And certainly it could lead to some muscle pain, as I said, and it could lead you not to feel so good. But it's not going to adversely affect your health. I think that probably what they were saying was it actually could hurt your other systems of your body or actually have some link to your health. There's no evidence for that whatsoever.
And it'll hurt your social status because people think you're short.
As well.
After Tara Parker Pope wrote about your book in her New York Times blog, the comment section, I don't know if you saw this, was full of people who wrote in to debunk your debunking, and they disagreed about whether you lose most of your body heat through your head, whether antibiotics lessen the efficacy of birth control pills, and whether milk makes you phlegmy. So let's go down a couple of those.
Sure.
How much of your body heat do you lose through your head?
you lose about almost exactly the proportion of heat through your head as your head makes up of your body. There's nothing special about the head. And the myth is somehow that you're losing 40 or 50% or some exorbitant number through your head. That's just not true. And I'm not just saying that because I believe it. They've done really good studies where they dip different parts of the body in cold water and then measure how much body heat you lose. And you lose no more through your head than any other similar size portion of your body.
You know we're going to use that as a promo for future shows. Dr. Carroll on the Brian Lehrer Show saying there is nothing special about your head.
Not in terms of heat, certainly.
And I always bought that one, too, that you lose 20% of the heat through your head, so it's more important to wear a hat than it is to wear shirts or whatever. Antibiotics lessen the efficacy of birth control pills. True or false?
It's just really, for the most part, false. And I saw a lot of the comments in the article saying, well, I know someone. The thing is that birth control pills do fail a certain percent of the time, especially when you don't use them perfectly. But they've done good studies, again, looking at people on and off birth control pills and on and off antibiotics, and they can't detect any significant failure rate for birth control pills while on antibiotics, nor can they really, for almost all antibiotics, detect any lower levels of most of the hormones that they use. The only exception is rifampin, which is a specific antibiotic that we sometimes use for people who might have TB. That's a very small percent of the population taking antibiotics. And even then, it's a theoretical risk. No one has actually ever shown actual decreased rates of birth control pills working while on rifampin.
And milk makes you phlegmy. True or false?
False. Again, it's one of those perception things where people believe it so strongly that they believe it to be true.
In fact, I believe that it's happened to me, that eating dairy has created mucus in my respiratory system. I was making it up. I was imagining that.
You are, and they've done really good studies which show that the particle size of the droplets of your saliva don't change, that they really can't show if people aren't sure whether or not they're getting milk or not, then they can't really tell if they're feeling more phlegmy or not, and certainly mucus production isn't increasing in any way that we can accurately measure. This is another one that's really in people's heads.
That pizza for the kid who has asthma. And the asthma attack came right after the pizza. You're saying he must have been allergic to wheat.
Well, see, that's one of those things where human beings in general like to make associations and things that happen at the same time. And often we will say if something happens at the same time that one caused the other. That's just not always true. Now, it's possible that you could have an allergy to something in pizza that would give you asthma, but it's very few of the people that have asthma.
And it's not from an overdose of cheese, at least in the opinion of Dr. Aaron Carroll, author of Don't Swallow Your Gum, Myths, Half-Truths, and Myths, Half-Truths, and Outright Lies, not Outright Rise, about your body and health. Eric in Montvale, you're on WNYC. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Brian. Thank you. I'm wondering, because if I get yelled at from my mother one more time about reading in low light, that I'm going to strain my eyesight. I don't know. Is that true?
It's absolutely not. It's one of the first ones we actually looked into. When you read in the dark, you can get a little strain because your eyes have to work a little harder. But that's a short-term thing. It absolutely goes away as soon as you stop doing it. It has no long-term effects. There's never been any study ever which can detect a relationship between reading in the dark and long-term eyesight. In fact, there's some good epidemiologic data that shows it's not true. We live today in the best lit that society has ever been. 100 years ago or more, they were reading by candlelight. And in general, most people think our eyesight as a species is getting worse over time. And so obviously, whereas the lighting is getting better, our eyesight's getting worse. It's not a relationship about reading in the dark.
And here's a corollary on our website from Hector in the East Village who writes, my mom always tells me to never go straight to the refrigerator right after a warm shower. She thinks that my face will freeze. Is this true?
No, it absolutely won't. First of all, your refrigerator's not cold enough to even freeze you short term, but certainly not long term. There's just no possible way that could be true.
Troy in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC.
Hey, yeah, I was wondering, I crack my knuckles and have for a really long time. I was wondering if that actually causes arthritis, like people say, and lately my elbows have started cracking too, like really loud. Is that weird?
No, it's weird. I mean, for some people, it's weird in the sense that it might bother them, but it absolutely will not give you arthritis. This is also another one that's in the book, and it's one that's very well known and very popular. That sound you're hearing, ironically enough, is actually the fluid in your joints boiling as you actually decrease the pressure by actually cracking them. Not boiling in the sense of too hot, but in gas escaping. It has nothing to do with arthritis. It will not lead to arthritis. In fact, it really doesn't damage the joints much at all. The only sort of ill effect you might see is that it does, as you found out, annoy a lot of people, and it could hurt you socially.
Well, we're almost out of time, and thanks for your call, Troy, but there's one more that I've got to get in that's going to be really controversial if it hasn't been already. You say that medical research shows that bed rest does not prevent preterm labor. Do you know how many women are on bed rest right now listening to this from their hospital rooms?
I do, and I can tell you I actually just a month or two ago gave a talk to a bunch of obstetricians and gynecologists and did this myth, and they didn't argue about it. It's something that's sort of well-known in the medical community, but when we turn to patients, we actually don't talk about it. There have been huge reviews looking at all the research done, and there's really only been one very good study, and it was enormous, and they could find no protection of bed rest for actually leading to preterm labor. Some people might argue, well, you know, maybe, but it probably doesn't hurt anything. But it does. It certainly is very hard socially for women. It can hurt a family financially. It's very difficult to do. It can lead to some real emotional problems. And it actually also can lead to some muscle atrophy if you really sort of lay in bed for too long. And again, there's no proven benefit, none. They can actually have no studies that show that bed rest will actually prevent preterm labor. And when you've got something where there's no proven benefit and potential harm, you really got to question if we should be doing it.
What about my friend who just last year went into labor at 5 months and was literally confined in a hospital room until she finally gave birth at 30 weeks?
Well, first of all, they probably put her in a hospital room because they wanted to have her to be close in case she went into labor. They may have administered drugs, which could have slowed down her labor if she was in the hospital. But the bed rest, the actually being confined to bed, it's never been shown to work, and there's good studies that actually should have detected it. And if they can't detect it in those studies, it means that either it doesn't work or it works so poorly that they can't even detect the difference. Either way, it's really a very small magnitude.
All right, back to work, ladies. But how do we know, before you go, the future isn't going to be like the Woody Allen film Sleeper, where he discovers that 200 years into the future, steak and hot fudge and cream pies are really the health food?
Well, here's the thing. We actually, in the book, try to lay out the research. We don't just tell you to believe this because we say so. We find actual studies, really good studies often, that prove these things in such a way that we don't believe that there's going to be research to overturn them. And we're very careful to say sometimes, well, look, there's just no good evidence. Maybe it'll turn up in the future. But if you do 5 studies in a row that can't detect a difference, even if the 6th study does, when you lump them all together, it's still going to be a very tiny magnitude. There's almost no chance that we're going to find out that steak and hot fudge are health foods. There's a lot of good evidence to show that those are not.
And I do acknowledge that you have pages and pages and pages and pages of footnotes at the end of this book, which is called Don't Swallow Your Gum, Myths, Half-Truths, and Outright Lies About Your Body and Health. Co-author Dr. Aaron E. Carroll has been my guest. Dr. Carroll, really interesting stuff. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.